Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, Text Number 21. It's 22 on the board, okay. I received 21 from Dharma Prabhu. So 21 was done yesterday? Okay, well, what was done is they wrote 21 on the board, but the actual verse that they wrote is 22. So I'll chant. Anyway, it's prose, so I guess most people, it's been difficult to repeat. So I'll just read the Sanskrit of 21, which is not on the board. But we are supposed to be doing 21 today. It's not a verse, so we'll just read it, and then we'll read the purport and the commentary. So the translation and the purport. So number 21. Bhagavan api manuna yathavad upakaupita pachitihi priyavrata naradayor avishamam abhisamikshyamanayor atmasam avasthanam avang manasam kshayam avyavahritam pravartayan agamat. So the word for word together. Bhagavan, the most powerful Lord Brahma, api, also, manuna, by manu, yatavat, as deserved, upakaupita apachitihi, being worshipped, Priyavrata Naradayoho, in the presence of Priyavrata and Narada, Avishamam, without aversion, Abhisamiksyamanayoho, looking on, Atmasam, suitable for his position, Avasthanam, to his abode, Avak manasam, beyond the description of mind and words. Kshayam, the planet. Avyavahritam, extraordinarily situated. Pravartayan, departing. Agamat, returned. Translation. Lord Brahma was then worshipped by Manu, who respectfully satisfied him as well as he could. Priyavrata and Narada also looked upon Brahma with no tinges of resentment. Having engaged Priyavrata in accepting his father's request, Lord Brahma returned to his abode, Satyaloka, which is indescribable by the endeavor of mundane mind or words. Manu was certainly very satisfied that Lord Brahma had persuaded his son, this is the purport. Manu was certainly very satisfied that Lord Brahma had persuaded his son Priyavrata to take the responsibility for ruling the world. Priyavrata and Narada were also very satisfied. Although Brahma had forced Priyavrata to accept the management of worldly affairs, thus breaking his vow to remain Brahmachari and completely engage in devotional service, Narada and Priyavrata did not look upon Brahma with resentment. Narada was not at all sorry that he had been frustrated in making Priyavrata a disciple. Both Priyavrata and Narada were exalted personalities who knew how to respect Lord Brahma. Therefore, instead of looking upon Brahma with resentment, they very feelingly offered him their respect. Lord Brahma then returned to his celestial abode, known as Satyaloka, which is described here as being and being unapproachable by words. It is stated in this verse that Lord Brahma returned to his residence, which is as important as his own personality. Lord Brahma is the creator of this universe and the most exalted personality within it. His lifetime is described in Bhagavad Gita 8:17, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Ahar Yad Brahmano Viduhu. The total duration of the four yugas is 4,300,000 years. And when that is multiplied 1,000 times, it equals 12 hours in the life of Brahma. Therefore, we cannot factually comprehend even 12 hours of Brahma's life, to say nothing of the 100 years that constitute his entire lifetime. How then can we understand his abode? The Vedic literatures describe that in Satyaloka there is no birth, death, old age, or disease. In other words, since Satyaloka is situated next to Brahmaloka, or the Brahman effulgence, it is almost as good as Vaikuntha Loka. Lord Brahma's abode is practically in our present status, therefore it has been described as avang manasagochara, or beyond the description of our words and the imagination of our minds. The Vedic literatures thus describe the abode of Lord Brahma, yad vai paradyam turuparmeshtyam nayatra shoko najara namrityo narti nachodvegaha. In Satyaloka, which is situated many millions and billions of years away, there is no lamentation, nor is there old age, death, anxiety, or the influence of enemies. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we see so many great personalities assemble here. There's Lord Brahma, Manu, Priyavrata, Narada, all very great personalities in their own right, and how they sort out a difficult situation is very instructive for us. There's a problem here. It's not as bad as the problems sometimes that may be faced, but there's a problem about a conflict of authorities, and it's something that happens often, even in this day and age. So we can all the precedents are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We can learn everything from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we're seeing how the order of the father versus the order of the guru. It's a classic conflict. So Priyavrata's father, Swayambhuva Manu, had ordered him to not to degrade things, but as if to take over the family business, you could say, which in this case was the management of heirs, which is a very large managemental load to bear. And Priyavrata was very wary of that responsibility. He had been engaged in austerities, and he didn't want to risk his chances at going back home, back to Godhead, or by getting involved in management. So this is a serious consideration that many devotees may have to face at different points in their life. At the same time, somebody has to manage things, so it's an important service at the same time. So Lord Brahma came to mediate the situation, respected him without any tinge of resentment. It's a very important point. The word here is avishramam, without any resentment, as Prabhupada translates. So Prabhupada often quotes the verse from the Uddhava Gita, Acharyo mam vijaniyat, navamanyita karhi jit. Krishna himself says that the Acharya, the Guru, should know him to be directly me, right? Sakshat Hari. And you should never disrespect him at any point of time. And we see also that one of the offenses to the holy names is Guru Avagya, disrespecting the Guru. Even in considering chanting the holy names, that's a big offense. So for everybody involved in this meeting, Lord Brahma's the ultimate guru, and Narada's there too. So it's a very interesting dynamic. Not only is there Priyavrata's guru there, but his grandfather guru is there too. It's a very dynamic on many levels. Sometimes, I guess, as ISKCON grows more and more, that may come up more and more, where you have gurus and their disciples who are also initiating gurus still on the planet at the same time. I can think of one precedent. I think Shivaram Maharaj had a sannyas disciple, Mahavishnu Maharaj, the elderly Mahavishnu Maharaj in Gujarat. So, you know, it's a modern day example of when that may happen. So here, they accepted his orders by saying, we saw in yesterday's verse, Priyavrata accepted his order by saying Bardam, and Prabhupada translates that as. So he accepted it wholeheartedly and he offered obeisances to Lord Brahma. And it's very important to accept the Guru's authority and Guru's order. Sometimes there's a fear, you know, of the authority, because they may give an instruction that interferes with our own plans, even our spiritual plans, right? Sometimes we may have some spiritual plans, or we want to go somewhere and study this, right? Or you want to go and live in the dharm here and there. And the guru may have some different idea for us, that he wants us to do some particular service. Or sometimes our temple authority is a kind of a local guru, you could say, may have a different idea for us. Of course, our spiritual authority, our guru, can give a bit more of a broad-minded vision of what's the ultimate spiritual good. The local temple authority may see what's best for the particular temple over what's best for the particular individual, and that's okay, but the guru may see what's best for the individual without any biased. But times that the disciple's idea is one thing and the authority's idea is another thing. So the disciple may have that, should I tell Guru Maharaj, should I ask him, or should I just do it, right? It's a common thing that devotees, you know, face at different points in their life. Ultimately, we should go through the authority of the guru, because then our efforts will be blessed and Krishna will be pleased. So we see here that they put aside that personal attachment to doing something, even though it was a spiritual thing, a very good thing. You know, he wanted to be brahmacharya, he wanted to be fully Krishna conscious. It's a very good thing. But there was a certain universal plan that had to, you know, happen, and he had an important part to play in that. This is all happening at the beginning of the day of Brahma. We're currently in the second half of Brahma's life, in the first month, on the first day, which is called the Brahma Kalpa, or Sweta Varaha Kalpa sometimes. So at this point of time, it's very early in the universe, and every person's contribution counts immensely. So nobody can very easily go on the detached renunciation program without it affecting the universal progress. Because Lord Brahma has his sons. Swayambhuva Manu is one of the primary sons of Lord Brahma, and he's involved in creating so many living entities and ruling them. And there's other sons too, Marichi, I think Kashyapa, and others. that also create various species and populate the universe, which is what Brahma's devotional service is to do. It's what the Lord's plan is for this place. So important roles to play, and at this point it's important for Priyavrata to do that, as there is not so much people around still. So we see that all of the people concerned here are very special devotees. Manu, this special Swayambhu Manu, among all the Manus, is quite a special Manu. He's directly a son of Lord Brahma, the only one among the Manus who's a direct son of Lord Brahma. And he's specially protected by the Lord in various ways. We hear in the Bhagavatam that the Lord's first Manvantara Yajna came specially to give protection to Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu, even though he was very busy in his universal management, used to very regularly find time to hear Krishna Katha every day. And he's described, he's one of the people that's described as going back home, back to Godhead in the Bhagavatam directly. So he's a very special devotee. It's not a case of a materialistic father just wanting to get his son, you know, involved, get him married and get him in the business or whatever, as the culture is in so many places here in India and elsewhere. So here he wants to involve his son in helping to fulfill the Lord's desire, the Lord's order for this universe. And Narada is another son of Lord Brahma, famous as being a great devotee. So we see here a bit of a contrast. On one side, we have Priyavrata, who wanted to be a brahmachari, but he's conceding to the order of his authorities, and he's getting married. And he will do his service, and he'll have blessings. And basically, he will be able to do his service in a very safe platform. Lord Brahma kind of gave him some advice how to do that. You know, that you'll be being situated in the Grihastha Ashram, you'll be like a person in a fort, and you'll be able to move anywhere freely without any worries of any fall down or dangers. So, and they gave him some blessings that he would not, you know, lose his spiritual consciousness by entering the ashram. To contrast this, we see somebody who got a similar request in the Bhagavatam earlier on, and they didn't follow it. Of course, that's part of the pastime. Who might that be? Can anybody say? Yes. Adi Purush is showing the four. So the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras also got a similar request. They were asked by Lord Brahma to marry again. They were the very first sons of Lord Brahma, so he had very high expectations. Four of them, certainly, we can get a lot of population from them. But it didn't work out. And we see that from not, you know, of course it was part of the pastime, and they were meant to stay as young boys, as Kumaras, and be exemplary tapasvis. Jai Shri Shri Gauranitai, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram, Shri Shri Radha Shama Sunda. But at the same time, as an instructive part of that pastime, we see that by not following the Guru's order, then a very destructive anger manifested from Lord Brahma, and that became personified as Rudra, which came from his, you know, between his eyebrows. So when we don't follow the Guru's instructions, then we may invoke that anger, which is not beneficial for the progress of the disciple. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasada, yasya prasadan nagati gotopi. That when you please the Guru, you'll be able to make spiritual progress very easily, and the Lord himself will be pleased with you. But when you don't please the Guru, then you won't be able to attain any spiritual success. So it's a very central point. So the second half of this purport Srila Prabhupada talks about Lord Brahma and his abode, and also his duration of life. So he talked about Lord Brahma's duration of life, that 1,000 cycles of the four yugas make up one day of Lord Brahma. And 360 such days in his year, and 100 years in his life. So it's a, if you calculate it, it's a huge lifespan. And the Bhagavatam covers just a few of the kalpas, and within the kalpas, the manvantaras. So it primarily covers this current kalpa, which is the Brahma kalpa, also called the Shvetavaraha kalpa. It's usually called the Shweta Kalpa. It's also called the Shweta Varaha Kalpa or the Brahma Kalpa. And it mentions briefly something about the Padma Kalpa, which was the last day in the first half of Brahma's life. Remember that we're in the first day in the second half of his life now. So actually I think the sages wanted to... Suta Goswami was going to start talking more and more about the Padma Kalpa, but the sages steered him onto the topic of Vidura. So, you know, in the Bhagavatam we hear primarily about those two kalpas, and we also hear about the first and the sixth and now the seventh Manvantara. So the Swayambhuva Manvantara, the Chakshusha Manvantara, the sixth one where Varaha and others appeared, and now the seventh one where Krishna appeared. I forget, Adipush, do we hear about a third kalpa in the Srimad Bhagavatam, or is it just those two? Okay, I think it might be just be those two. So, you know, the Brahma's life is so expansive that the Bhagavatam just covers, I believe, two of his kalpas. Two of his days out of, you know, what, 360 times, out of 3,600 days. So a lot happens in his one day. And his abode is also very special. What I'd like to do at this point is read a section from the Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita that describes something about Lord Brahma's abode, and also about Lord Brahma's special position in general. Two of these people here, Narada and Lord Brahma, are also involved in the Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And Narada, as we know, is on the quest to find the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. And he goes through various different great devotees, and when he goes to the heavenly planets, he first goes to see Indra, and then he goes to see Lord Brahma, and then he goes beyond the material world to see Lord Shiva. But when he goes to see Indra, Indra, you know, says various reasons why he is not the recipient of the Lord's mercy, but he recommends Lord Brahma. And so part of this description talks about Lord Brahma's abode, which is what Prabhupada's talking about in the purport here. So we'll read a section of that. So Indra's recommending to Narada to go and see Brahma. He says, "You should, O best son of Brahma, that your own father is the true recipient of the favor of Lord Hari. He is directly the son of Lord Vishnu, the husband of Lakshmi. In one day of Brahma, 14 Indras like me come and go, along with different sets of Manus and all the demigods. That one day equals 1,000 cycles of earthly ages. According to the scriptures, Brahma's night is of the same duration. 360 of such days and nights make one of his years, and his life thus 100 years. He is the creator of the planets and the rulers he assigns them. He is the world's chief protector, the dispenser of the fruits of karma, and at the onset of his night, the destroyer of the world. So at time his day begins, he recreates everything, and every time his night comes, everything is again destroyed." So it's not just a one-time creation. He's not just doing his job one time and then you know, relaxing for a very, very long part of every day. He again does his service of creation. And every night, the world is again destroyed. So the Mahapurusha, the thousand-headed form of the Lord, is always directly visible on Brahma's planet, personally accepting the countless oblations offered him, and thus always giving delight to his devotees. This is starting to talk about Lord Brahma's abode now, and a very special feature of his abode is that he has a special form of the Lord always staying with him on his abode. That form of the Lord is called the Mahapurusha. So it's described in the third chapter of the first canto, before it discusses all the Lila avatars. It briefly describes Mahavishnu and Garbhodakshay Vishnu and their functions. So Mahavishnu manifests the ingredients of creation. Maya Devi takes those ingredients and fashions a universe out of them, as Vishnuf explains in his commentary. And then she tells the Lord that please come and enter into this universe. So he enters into the universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and then Lord Brahma sprouts. Lord Brahma grows from the, takes birth on the lotus that grows from his navel. So that form, the Mahapurusha, Mahavishnu, who enters the form, enters the universe as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Sorry, it's so cold, my brain's freezing up. That he actually stays on Brahma's planet in a localized form as the Mahapurusha. He has his own Garbhodakshay Vishnu, you know, kind of a form or an expansion that stays with him as the Mahapurusha. And that Mahapurusha accepts all the offerings of the yagyas done on Brahmaloka by the sages. He eats all the oblations, and then he goes to his Shayana Mandira, his sleeping abode. So he eats the oblations of the sages, and he takes rest there on Brahma's planet. And that's going to be an interesting point of discussion a little bit later in this passage. I could give you thousands of other reasons why Brahma is the real object of Sri Krishna's mercy. What more needs to be said? He is, in fact, Krishna himself. This is talking about him being one of the guna avatars, being a form of the Lord, right? You know this, since it is proclaimed in both Shruti and Smriti. You must also be familiar, my Lord, with other aspects of Brahma's greatness and the greatness of the residents of his planet. Sri Parikshit said, having heard these words from Indra, God replied, well said, sir, well said, and hastily went to Brahma's planet. There Narada first heard from a distance the huge sound of the many great sacrifices performed unceasingly and with great devotion by the sages on Brahmaloka. He then beheld among the sages the Supreme Lord in his Mahapurusha form, looking very much satisfied, decorated with crowns of matted locks. The Lord in his thousand-headed form, the personification of sacrifice, had appeared there with his consort just to accept the offerings and delight his worshippers. To enliven lotus-born Brahma, the Lord consumed all the items offered him, placing them into his thousand mouths with his thousand hands. After awarding the performers of the sacrifices the benedictions they desired, Lord Mahapurusha went to his sleeping quarters. As the goddess Lakshmi massaged his feet, he entered his pastime of sleep. At the Lord's request, Brahma then instructed his sons to continue the sacrifices while he went to his own royal court to deliberate on the management of the universe. As Brahma sat comfortably on his universal throne, absorbed in hearing and reciting the glories of the Lord, tears flowed from his eight eyes. Surrounding Lord Brahma in attendance were the personified powers of universal rulership. Narada came close, offered respects to his father by falling to the ground like a stick, and then spoke. Sri Narada said, "It is you who have truly received the mercy of Lord Hari. After all, you are the master of all masters of the living beings of the universe, the grandfather of all the worlds. You alone create, maintain, and devour the 14 worlds. You forever rule the universe as the self-born. Present in person in your assembly are the Vedas, Puranas, and other scriptures, the revealers of truth, who were born from your four mouths. Your world can be attained only by saintly persons who faultlessly perform their prescribed social duties, free from pride and other vices, for 100 lifetimes." Even to get to Lord Brahmasapur, that's the general 100 lifetimes of perfect varnashram. Within the universe, there is no higher world than yours. Even Lord Narayana's Vaikuntha planet is found inside your world. If you're on Brahma's planet, you're basically guaranteed liberation when Brahma goes back home, back to Garud. So it's, as Krama Muktaja liberation goes, it's the step prior to liberation. So on Brahma Loka, Lord Narayana resides always in his manifest form as the lotus-navelled Mahapurusha. He eats his shares of sacrifice and grants the sacrificial results. Although in the distant past you made many attempts and were unable to find him, after performing austerities you finally saw him just for a moment in your heart. When Lord Brahma was born, he was searching for his origin, and he even climbed down the stem of the lotus and was searching around the water that fills half the universe, and finally he heard the words tapa. And then by following that instruction, doing penance, he got a glimpse of the Lord. And in Brahma Sanghita, he got a lot of revelation too. And at a later point in time, the Lord came to reside on his planet as the Mahapurusha permanently. So it's quite a special devotee. Therefore, you are surely the dearmost devotee of Lord Krishna, indeed, other than Krishna himself, appearing in various bodies for your pastimes. Sri Parikshit said, thus loudly praising Brahma, bowing before him with great devotion again and again, the sage Narada expansively sang Brahma's glories, as he had heard them from Indra and seen them with his own eyes. Merely by hearing what Narada said, we know in Briya Bhagavatamrita, everybody feels that they're not the recipient of the Lord's mercy, so they always refute the praise and point Narada to some greater person. Merely by hearing what Narada said, Brahma grew disturbed. He anxiously covered his 8 ears and said over and over again, "I am just a servant." With some effort, four-headed Brahma checked the anger stirred within him by hearing what no one should hear, and rebuked his son Narada. No one should hear, in general, false praise, and especially nobody should hear that they are Krishna, right? Lord Brahma did not like that line, that you are Krishna himself. Of course, it's true philosophically, but Achintya Veda Veda Tattva at the same time. He's also a jiva at the same time. Sri Brahma said, "I am not the Supreme Lord Krishna. On what authority and by what logic do you say this? Haven't I constantly taught you about this since you were a little boy?" His personal energy, Mahamaya, stands within his sight like a maidservant. It is she who deploys her material modes to create, maintain, and demolish this world. All of us are subject to her and bewildered. So you should not think me the recipient of even a trace of Krishna's mercy. By the power of Krishna's Maya, I am always deluded by various conceits. I think myself the controller, the grandfather, and spiritual master of the universe. Proud of my birth from Krishna's lotus navel, I think myself a great ascetic, his great worshipper. I'm overwhelmed by the countless duties of universal management. Worrying about the imminent destruction of my planet, I live in terror of the all-devouring end of time. All I want for myself is liberation. For this purpose of liberation, I engage others in worshipping the Lord and also worship Him myself. Since He is the Lord of the universe, is there any other place, is there any place where He does not reside? There's a short little commentary that's interesting here. In effect, Brahma is saying, I worship the Lord for liberation, not from the sheer joy of devotional service. So you should not regard this worship as a sign of my being favored. You said that God resides in my planet, but that is nothing exceptional, since the Lord of the universe lived and outside everything. Brahma continues, He accepts sacrificial offerings from me only to promote the Vedic teachings and shows special favor to the sacrifices themselves, which are dear to Him because He is their original creator. Just consider this, my dear professor of logic. Vichara Acharya. Brahma addresses Narada as Vichara Acharya, professor of logic. He loves only devotion. He shows His mercy only to His devotees, never to non-devotees. Forget about my having any devotion for Him. I would be happy if only it were true that I never offend Him. I cannot expect Him to tolerate my offenses as He does, Lord Shiva's. With benedictions obtained from me, the wicked Hiranyakashipu became the tormentor of all the worlds, dedicated to violence against Vaishnavas. After the Lord, in His form as Nrisimhadeva, destroyed Hiranyakashipu, I and my entourage stood fearful at a distance, trying to praise the Lord with skillful prayers, but He would not even honor us with a sidelong glance. Yet when Prahlad was inaugurated king, at once became pacified. Then I slowly approached Him, and He angrily ordered me, You should not give such benedictions to demons, O lotus-born one. Nonetheless, I kept on giving benediction to wicked demons like Ravana. Whose tongue can even mention the sins Ravana has done? Remember the offenses committed against the Lord by Indra and other demigods I appointed? The excessive pride of those demigods constantly perverts their discrimination. Indra sent rain to retaliate for the Govardhan sacrifice, sometimes fought against the Lord, and committed other offenses. The Lord of the waters, Varuna, offended the Lord by kidnapping Nanda Maharaj. By fate, returned the cows belonging to Barna, and so on. Yamaraj made mistakes like allowing the wrongful death of the son of the Lord's teacher, and Kuvera was responsible for the wicked misdeeds of Sankachuda and others. In the lower planetary systems live the Daityas, who always attack Lord Vishnu's devotees, and also living there are the serpent friends of Kaliya, who by nature are contaminated by anger. And recently, by my magic, I stole the calves and young friends the Lord was watching after in Vrindavan. I took them all away while the boys were having lunch. I then saw some most amazing wonders and became frightened. Offering prayers and bowing down to the Lord, I thought, I am so arrogant, but now, in his pastime as a cowherd boy, he has tricked me. Simply by the spontaneous glance of favor upon me from his lotus face, I became joyful. I realized how fortunate I was to have visited the land of Raja, which is so dear to him. Fearing I would commit more offenses if too long, I then went away. What else need I tell you about my ill fortune? In fact, in this universe, I see no object of Lord Vishnu's mercy equal to Mahadev Shiva. He is famous as the dear friend of the Lord. So that in the commentary here in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, an interesting point is mentioned that although the Lord lives on Lord Brahma's planet as the Mahapurusha, he didn't go to him, this particular Kalpa at least, to request him to remove the burden of the earth. In other words, to request him to advance as Krishna. He went to the milk ocean where the localized form of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu stays. So, you know, he has a form of Gaurdakshaya Vishnu right there with him on his planet. Why didn't he go to him? So Sanatana Goswami offers some different possibilities why that was so. Let me see if I can find a particular place, otherwise I'll just tell you from memory. One of the reasons was, after accepting the offerings of sacrifices, the Lord goes into his sleeping chambers. And so Lord Brahma was afraid to disturb him at that point in time, so he went to another form of the Lord further away. Here it is. Srila Sanatana Goswami suggests that Brahma and the others may have gone to Svetadvip to see Karanarana at Kshiradakshaya Vishnu because they felt reluctant to disturb Lord Maharpurusha's privacy while he was enjoying his sleep. Or else, Brahma may have calculated that if Lord Maharpurusha were to descend to earth at his request, Brahma Loka would be bereft of his presence for the duration of the Krishna avatar. It would go to the milk ocean and ask Lord Vishnu there to become the avatar. So he didn't want to lose association with the Lord. In any case, when Sri Krishna descends, all the expansions of Godhead appear within him, including Lord Mahapurusha and the Lord of Svetadvip. Thus, to say that Krishna descends through one form of Vishnu or another makes little difference. Krishna alone is the ultimate source of all avatars. So this verse is primarily about following the order of Guru, respecting Guru. And not only that, there's an extra item that we should talk about briefly, is being grateful to Guru. Being kritagya, I think a few classes back when Madhavananda was giving one of the classes, we had the word kritagya. Krita means something that has been done, and gya means that you're aware, or you keep it in mind. So you keep it in mind what good things have been done for you by others. The Guru has given so much spiritual knowledge by which you can get free from the material clutches, and the Guru has given you especially knowledge about Krishna, by which you can attain the highest pleasure in the form of rasa. So, certainly, a great amount of gratefulness is should be there in the heart of any cultured man. There's another word. There's kritagya, one who's aware, one who keeps in mind what has been done for them. And there's another word, kritagna, one who destroys what has been done. It means an ungrateful person somebody's done some good things for them, but they'll break the relationships or they'll offend that person. That's the opposite side of the coin, and it's something that we don't want to fall into. It's said that the earth can tolerate so many things, but it cannot tolerate the burden of an ingrate. An ingrate means somebody who's not grateful. So we have to be very grateful to the spiritual authorities, to our gurus who have helped us along the way so much. And we have to take their order just as seriously as Maharaj Priyavrata took the order of his father and of his grandfather, Lord Brahma. So we'll finish there. If anybody has any comments. Okay, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaur Premanandi.